Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, we are back, and I want to, just for the sake of our technical difficulty, re-announce that this is a time for justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network. This show discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion of legal minds. And ultimately, we want fair dealing, we want justice under the law, but all too often, this is not the actions that we see. So we're going to bring back on our guest. Our topic tonight is law and protecting and valuing the Black woman. Again, we are coming back from technical difficulties. We were on, and we have our sister Nichelle. Sister Nichelle, I've opened your mic. Are you back with us, Sister Nichelle?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here, Sister Pamela. All praise due to Allah.
All praises are due to Allah. And Sister Sherry, are you back with us?
Yes, ma'am, I am. All praises due to Allah.
Yes, ma'am. All praises are due to Allah. So again, hey, we had a technical difficulty. Our show dropped. And we were bringing on our sister, who her name is Pamela Smith. And Pamela Smith is the subject of an article that appeared in The Final Call, entitled Fighting for Justice for My Sisters. And this was an article August 17th, 2021. Ms. Smith, as I was saying, her voice, let me just make sure she is on the line, our beloved sister. Sister Pamela, I'm opening up your mic. Sister Pamela.
Yes, I hear you.
Yes, ma'am. Sister Pamela, well, welcome to A Time for Justice on the Elevated Places Network. I do apologize for our glitch. I want to go ahead and talk a bit about you again. As it was, we mentioned in the article before that Sister Pamela is a voice for Black women. She's fighting for the rights of Black women. She has a story to tell regarding their, you know, the issue with people being raped and being sexually assaulted in prison. This was an incident. This was an issue. This was an occurrence. This was a crime that Mrs. Smith filed a lawsuit. She's been fighting for 23 years because in her lawsuit, she is saying, she's charging that this happened to her in prison in Oklahoma. So let me go ahead and introduce Ms. Smith. Thank you so much, dear beloved sister, for coming on the show. And again, I apologize for any inconvenience with the last startup. But go ahead and talk to us and tell us a little bit about yourself, Ms. Smith.
Good evening. Thank you, Pamela, for having me on your show this evening. And I'd like to say good evening to my sisters, the sisters of the most respected law, the judges, Your Honor. Thank you all for this opportunity that I have to share this panel with you all. I hope that my story of being a rape victim, a survivor of rape while I was incarcerated, I'd like to say good evening to all of your listening audience. So I thank you all this evening. I give honor to God, who's head of my life, who orders my footsteps. A righteous man's footsteps are ordered by the Lord, and I thank God for 25 years that he has sustained me, kept me, and has protected me from the evildoers of the battle of the fight that I've been in, fighting for justice for myself as well as many other women around the world that have found themselves in a situation as I found myself in. I was guilty as charged when I went to prison. But when I went to prison, my judgment and sentence did not say, my JNS did not say, Miss Pamela Smith, you must go to prison and be raped and sexually assaulted with a glass salt shaker. Good evening. I am Pamela Smith. I was a former inmate in the Oklahoma prisons. I was guilty as charged. I went to prison for checks and credit cards. I had an addiction. By the grace of God, I've been clean and sober going on 26 years. I've been out of prison going on 22 years. So while I was incarcerated in the Oklahoma prisons, I was on a work release program. The Department of Correction and the Department of Public Safety entered a contract where female offenders could go out and clean. I was a janitor at Department of Public Safety at 575 East 36th Street North. While I was there, I encountered a driver's examiner. In the year of 1997, the rapist by the name of Donald Reed Cochran asked me to show him my breasts. He wanted me to do something that he could trust me. I had no clue this man was asking the unthinkable of me. My brother had came to visit me at the Department of Public Safety, and he indicated to me, the driver's examiner, that I had broke the rules. My hell began. I was raped and sexually assaulted with a glass salt shaker, April the 10th of 1998 at the Department of Public Safety. I was raped with a glass salt shaker to say goodbye to a dying sister. My sister was in the hospital, and I wanted to go see my sister. And before I could go see my sister, the state driver's examiner raped me in uniform, badge, Department of Public Safety, in a storage room. That morning before I could go see my sister, April of 1998, April the 10th to be exact, I had to be tortured that morning. Well, I skipped one other date that was significant to me. On February the 6th of 1998, which is my birthday, I was always raped most of the time on a Thursday or a Friday at Department of Public Safety. And why is that? The rapist that raped me, Donald Reed Cochran, Sr., who lives in Houston, Texas, by the way, now, moved from Tulsa, trying to run from his crime. I was raped so many times at the Department of Public Safety that I could not count them. I cried out to the state officials there, even when they showed the condom that I was given to rape me with it on my birthday. The state driver's improvement guy by the name of Willie Green, he laughed in my face and told me to get it out of his office. I even went to the rapist's wife's best friend named Myra Willis, and I told her I was being raped and abused at the Department of Public Safety by Donald Reed Cochran. Please help me. She said, I can't help you, and I can't. I said, would you please tell Jeannie Cochran, Donald Reed Cochran's wife, that Donald Reed is, Cochran is raping me and doing things that's inappropriate to me. She said, Pamela, I can't tell her that. It'll kill her. I often wondered, being another black female sister, you were concerned about a white woman's husband than to help the cry of your sister that was standing there in need of your help, because nobody at the Department of Public Safety would help me because I was an inmate. I had a pass. I was black, and this man was doing whatever he wanted to do at the Department of Public Safety. He violated not only me. He locked up a little 15-year-old girl by the name of Candace Rowe. He locked her up. She was his first victim. She went up there to do a driver's test. He told Candace Rose the day before she fell at the school and ordered her to come to Department of Public Safety. She came to Department of Public Safety the next day with her grandmother. Grandmother sat in the foyer. Donna Reed Cochran told her she failed a written test. Court records proved that she never failed a written test. He just told her that. He took Candace in the back office room. I was always raped in a storage room at Department of Public Safety. He took Candace Rose to one of the office, locked the door, sat on the desk, position to rape Candace. We were black women. Candace was just an innocent young girl, 15 and a half years of age, trying to get a written test, a Christian, beautiful little girl. She lives in Houston, by the way. She left Tulsa. I was an inmate. I hit a pass. Who's going to believe me? Who's going to believe this black woman? But yet the evidence of the glass salt shaker was delivered. It was retrieved at the Department of Public Safety in the storage room by the Oklahoma Highway Patrol, Lieutenant George Randolph. He retrieved the glass salt shaker. He brought it to me. And when I say brought it to me, I was in Tulsa at a work release program. And when the facility shut down in Tulsa in August of 1998, they shipped the inmates back to, well, there was bed space. So I went back to Eddie Warriors. At this time, I had got back to Eddie Warriors. I wrote the lieutenant of the Oklahoma Highway Patrol and asked them and told them about this. My case manager named Carmelia Clancy called Ed Spencer at the Department of Public Safety when I arrived back in Eddie Ward, just like in October 1998. I returned in August of 1980.
And you know what? I'm going to slow you down on the recitation of this because, you know, it's so, so much. You know, one of the things that we're talking about tonight, because your story is so fascinating, and I think it's so important that people know where we're at. As you say, you were incarcerated, and we're talking about valuing of the black female. And at this point, what we're hearing you talk about is how you valued yourself. Because I think the allegations that you're making, that you, your story that you filed your lawsuit about, that you spoke out about, you were fighting. And so many people don't, you know, according to the stats, which we read earlier, but let me read them again. You know, this is a situation where Human Rights Watch reports at least 15% or more of the 200,000 women incarcerated in the United States have experienced sexual assault behind bars. I was reading an article out of Florida, which is entitled, this particular article is Feds, Florida Prison Staff Beats and Rape Women Inmates. And this is the December 22nd, 2020 article. And in that article, it talks about the raping or the sexual assault of women in prison. And it also talks about how women are not, you know, only of the 161 incidents. Now, this article came out of courthousenews.com. Out of 161 incidents, they're saying that they investigated these incidents between 2015 and 2019. Only 8 resulted in the officer's arrest, according to the report. You know, and they talk about, I think, as you're talking about, you're making these abuse allegations. In this article, it says, in some cases, abuse allegations were channeled through alleged abusers who were tasked with writing up the incident reports on behalf of the alleged victims. And so this is one of those systemic issues where you're going to be faced with pushback. You're going to be faced with punishment. You're going to be faced with disbelief. And what we want to really get to in this particular show is that law and protecting the black female, we talk about how there's a historical connection of the black woman assaulted during slavery, and it exists in these modern prisons. Because as we know, the 13th Amendment is, which supposedly abolished slavery, that is, of course, unless you commit a crime. And so this, you know, crime supposedly puts people in a situation where, just like during slavery, they're trying to justify raping women, abusing men in these prisons. And so, you know, we're going to come back. We want to hear more of your story. We want to hear about why you speak out. And we have these two lawyers that, because the other show got cut off, we didn't hear their introductions. So if it's okay with you, can I give them a chance to make an introduction? I know with Sister Sherry Muhammad,
Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am, praise be to Allah. Thank you so much. Because our Sister Sherry Muhammad, last week we did a show that talked about sex trafficking, and we talked about how women aren't protected. We talked about the law, and we talked about missing black women, and there was a lady that was actually giving us information on sex trafficking. But our sister Sherry, she talked about some research that talks about how the law even has these remnants of slavery. So, Sister Sherry, I want to give you that opportunity to give our audience that information, if you don't mind.
Yes, ma'am. When we look at the treatment of black women, particularly the crime of rape, even as late as the early 90s, white men were not being convicted of rape of black women.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that in 1991, as I was preparing a research paper on the myth of black sexuality, there were only 2 reported cases. Now imagine that. Only 2 reported cases of white men being convicted of raping black women. And one of them, it was because she was a child. That occurred. The flip side, when we look at the case of Joanne Little, a black, a female inmate who was raped and who managed to escape her rapist and protect herself, despite all of the evidence, and I can't remember where that was, but listening to Sister Pamela Smith's story is what reminded me of the story of Joanne Little, because she killed the guard that was raping her. But she ended up being charged with murder because we don't, it is not believed that we even have the right to defend ourselves. So there is a long history in this country of abuse and rape of black women and girls.
Right.
Yes, ma'am. That's very interesting because even in our outline, we talk about, what is his name, Thomas Jefferson and the rape of Sally Hemings and how the characterization of that as being, you know, he fathered children or whatever when it's actually rape. And I know, too, you spoke also, Sister Sherry, about the media, well, this is legal research with this Jezebel's, you know, mammies and how some of the imagery, I think you had referenced how there was a law professor that did some research on that. Can you share a little bit about that for us?
Yes. One of the, when we start looking at the history of the treatment of black women, we have to take it back to the historic portrayal of black women. And historically, black women were portrayed as sexually promiscuous women. That is, for instance, in the Thomas Jefferson scenario, they could tell that story from the perspective as if a 13-year-old girl seduced a 40-year-old man. That's the way they tell that story. The documentary, I believe, is called Sally Hemings, The Seduction of Thomas Jefferson. Now, how crazy is that? That a 13-year-old girl is thought to have seduced a 40-year-old, a 13-year-old slave, a 13-year-old enslaved woman or young girl seduced a 40-year-old free white man. Think on that. Think on that. And that is that's why we have the myth that we have. But then it's even worse when we begin to perpetuate those myths ourselves. And so we see now in the media, in music, and especially in current music, that black women are portrayed as loose women, as so-called vixens, so to speak. Right. And all of that detracts from the need. It makes it appear that we're not worthy of protection, that this is who we are and who we desire to be, which is furthest thing from the truth. As Sister Pamela was indicating, her prison sentence didn't include rape.
Right.
That was not
That's
a part
right.
of her sentence.
Yeah.
But because of the way the system has devalued the black woman, a black woman, once she goes into the system, all of those things could happen. And I just Googled the Joan Little case, and one of the reasons that that case made history, because she ultimately was acquitted in 1975, okay? But she was the first woman who used the defense that she used deadly force to resist sexual assault. Because before
wow.
that, black women didn't have that right.
Right.
You didn't have
wow.
the right to strike
yeah.
out, to
yeah.
hit a white man.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, I want to go, like, back to what Ms. Smith is saying, but I want to give Judge Nichelle an opportunity to speak, too. But I want to put the context of slavery. You know, slavery, as we know, is a crime, as rape is a crime, but both of those things were done, you know, of course, during slavery. So we got to look at this no legal recognition of the black family during slavery. And we got to look at it that blacks were property and subject to the white people, all white people. But also, once slavery was over, the value of black people even went down even further, because we've heard many times they say, well, if you were a slave, they would try to take care of you like a car. You know, they at least make sure, you know, you fed and you whatever got, you know, tetanus, I don't know. You know, we died at the age of 20 and 30. So, but even more after slavery, this is where you see this working people to death, because it's no longer their property. So it makes me wonder, when we look at our women being raped, incarcerated, being just totally devalued, is the message that you are of no value anymore. You're no value. You know, so this is why, again, I'm going to bring on Sister Nichelle, and then I'll come back to you, Ms. Smith. Please bear with us. You know, but that's why we must value ourselves. That's really going to be our takeaway from this. We want to talk about the reduction of the imprisonment of black women. We want to talk about valuing ourselves. We have to fight for those who are incarcerated. You know, we, of course, in the nation, we believe that separation is the only solution because this is totally disagreeable to have to live amongst rapists. But, you know, these are some of the issues that we want to talk about and ultimately get to the point of valuing ourselves as black women. You know, because this is a enemy that is just ruthless, you know, has no value for us. And we have to stop begging them to value us. You know, now Ms. Smith, she filed a lawsuit. So that's another solution, filing lawsuits and speaking out, because she values herself by speaking out and filing lawsuits and standing up against her injustice. And Sister Nichelle, I wanted to bring you back on. Sister, can you please?
Yes, ma'am.
Add
yes,
to this
ma'am.
Conversation. Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely. All praises due to Allah. So, Sister Pamela Smith, wow, what a story and what tragedy and trauma you experienced, sister. So sorry for that. You know, we live in a very sick world. It's not our world. It's a world that's based upon sin and iniquity and just evil people. The final call did a wonderful job on this women in prison and the culture of abuse, rape, and all of that back in January of 2022. I think it was January 25th or so, 2022, which outlined a lot that has been going on in the prisons. There was a march that was done. Some of the brothers in the Nation of Islam took part in that march. There were two women in particular. I believe it was Miss Vaughn and Miss Duckworth, who called for the rally and started really showcasing a lot of the issues that our sisters have been having in prison. And of course, women in prison include other women of other races. However, because black women make up such a predominant number of the women in prison, it affects us in particularly a little bit more. And what a terrible system. As a judge in this dispensation of time, what I've been able to see, though, is that there is some movement towards trying to, as we diversify who's on the bench, who are the legislators and in Congress, as brothers and sisters entering into those areas in high numbers as of recent, And you can't help but be black when you get there because that's what you are. And so because of that, there has been some movement towards people recognizing the fact that black women are not treated well, in the prison system and the like. One of the things that came out of that rally was the need for legislation. And in fact, there was some kind of Senate bill that was being considered, which would put in place oversight advisory committees over the prisons and various aspects of our lives to make sure that there's a checks and balance, that this may not occur and will not occur. But we know what happens, and that's really a solution as brothers and sisters and people move into these positions of power. Legislation can be made and enforced that will require people to take a look at and know that these things are going on. And I think everyone is bearing witness that they understand that this is happening. So, you know, but it's just a continuation of what we experience. I think of 12 Years a Slave. That was a movie that came out, a true account of a brother who was taken into slavery. But I remember in particular the black woman who the slave master was in love with, and he would rape her all the time. And, you know, when she didn't do what he wanted, it was a problem. And just seeing that black woman suffer that kind of atrocity, and there was a scene where the brother says, in the name of God, don't beat her. This is your, you know, don't beat her. You're going to kill her. And he turned around and looked at him true to form and said, listen, this is my property, and I can do whatever I want with it in accordance with the Bible says and the law. And so I think we suffer with a little bit of that coming into this day and age where there's just that if you are part of the system and people have forgotten about you and they think that you're nothing or you're being thrown away because you happen to have been convicted of a crime that makes you less than they feel like they can take advantage and they can do what they want because in those confines of those walls and then even in the jobs that we enter into, we work for them. We are part of their system. And so we are kind of sort of in the wicked man's mind property. And so they can do whatever they want with that property. And so, you know, we need activists and people that are going to get to some positions of power to make some change. And so being a judge, being a legislator, being in those seats, and I have a lot of friends and people that have gotten to those levels, you know, change is trying to be made. But we know, sisters, we live in a very wicked, wicked world. And as much as we try to get in and do what we need to do, there are forces of evil that we just can't combat. And at the end of the day, only God can deal with the wicked mind of Satan. But we can do the best we can. And I'm telling you, sister, there are people on the front lines trying to help sisters like Pamela Smith to recognize that there are issues, to treat people with dignity and respect, even though they are involved in the legal system or the criminal system, to know that they're worth something and know that these are brothers and sisters. And even if they're guilty of a crime, it doesn't mean that they are nothing and they're to be thrown away. And so I'm happy to be in that fight. I do it every day when I'm dealing with my people. And I'm telling you, there are people in the other branches of government that are really trying with their black selves and their, you know, Latino selves and other things to recognize that we're suffering and it's not fair and it's uncalled for and it's just damn wicked.
Yes, ma'am. And let me just throw this out here, and I want to ask you a couple of questions if you don't mind, Ms. Smith, because that it is a constitutional violation of the law too. It's a violation of the Eighth Amendment. Which it's a cruel and unusual punishment at the very minimum to prison abuse. This is according to, I think they call it the prison rape statutes or something. And they're talking about how only women comprise only 7% of state prison populations, but they comprise 40% of sexual abuse victims. You know, there, and so this whole incident of prison sexual assault is really a problem. And when I first began to practice law and I would actually see these stories, see, this is what we got to talk about. as a private practitioner, you get calls and you hear people tell you things that are going on in these prison institutions where they're being tortured, as Ms. Smith is talking about, or they're being beaten or they're being deprived of their constitutional rights. And it just sounds like really, you know, because you, as Sister Nichelle said, when people are behind bars, they tend to be forgotten. So I want to ask Ms. Smith, you know, do you think women get the help that they need in prison? You work with a lot of women, I understand. Go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely not. I do want to say to the two judges there that on August the 12th, I made a major ruling at the 10th Circuit Court of Appeal. It was a major ruling for inmates all around the world. State officials did everything they could to make sure that ruling was not nationally publicized. That set the standards for inmates all around the world. I won on the in the 14th Amendment.
Okay.
Now, y'all can look that case up, a very powerful case that I fought. No, women do not get the help they need in the prison. It's simply because the prison guards, the state employees, no matter who they are, the statute says that if you are raped by a state employer, someone that has custodian jurisdiction over you while you're incarcerated, it is called rape. So these women that are incarcerated are not educated enough to know that they are being raped. They feel like that they're doing sex for favors. And these prison guards take advantage of that. And when the young ladies make their allegations be known to the authorities, they either suffer retaliation, they go put on lock, or in the middle of the night, they get shipped to another facility. So the story goes away. So in order for these young ladies to get the help that they need to stop the prison abuse, this is just my thought and my process. The federal agencies need to oversight stronger on these state prisons. Stop funding these prisons that's going to allow these state employees to abuse women. You're funding money to help support abuse on inmates in the state of Oklahoma. And the feds need to be more supervision over these state prisons and stop a lot of this. Start sending a message that it's not okay to rape these women in prison. It is not okay. Not okay to allow a state employee or prison guard to rape them and then give them a promotion and move them to another prison. It doesn't send a strong message. And to answer that question, absolutely not. In the state of Oklahoma right now, as we speak, there were over 7,285 untested rape kits that has left on the shelf here. These women gave their DNAs. They left these women's DNAs just sitting on the shelf, unattended. Do y'all know why they left them? 80% of those women look like us. They were black women. And guess who they allegedly perpetrators were? Men that look like our president. These are men in power. So these girls' cries go unattended. So no, women in prison do not get the help they deserve. And for that matter, black women that's not even incarcerated, our cries are still unheard. They're still unheard.
That's right.
A black woman can get raped, and we have to fight like hell to get justice. Let a white woman drop a tear. A black man look at her cross-eyed. He's going to jail. You can believe a white woman's lie, but can't believe a black woman's truth. I fought for 25 years and stood on truth. And I value my body. I value my life. I value the life of my sisters that's left behind, that is powerless in their situation, can't fight, because the same people that's raping them are their caregivers. So when they speak up, want to go home to their babies, want to go home to the ones they love, they get beat down. They get thrown on lock. But you see, I was just crazy enough to trust God. I fought from behind the prison walls. I said, you'll either kill me, I'm going to tell this story, because no man would rape me and take my body and viciously do what you want to do with it, because I'm black, I'm powerless, and I had a past. But one thing they didn't know about this sister right here, I had a life before I went to prison.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, Sister Pamela, you made a good point about they'll believe a white woman's lies but not a black woman's truth. We touched on that we touched on that briefly this week when we started. We made the comparison of the case of the sister Tawana Brawley that was raped by the white police officers back in the 80s. And the Central Park jogger. Now here,
yes, ma'am,
with Sister Tawana Brawley, rather than believe that these officers raped her, they wanted to spin the narrative that she and her mother concocted the whole story because they were afraid of her stepfather, right? Even though they had all this physical evidence.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of that, you had the Central Park jogger, no DNA of those five young black boys that they convicted, none whatsoever, nothing tying them, no physical evidence tying them to the scene. The actual victim had no memories. But because people said they saw those young boys running in the area of the park at the time it happened, they ended up convicted and spending over 20 years in jail.
That's right.
And even after the actual perpetrator confessed while he was in prison, and then they compared his DNA, and yes, it was him. Do you know that judges did not want to give them retrials or let them be gone?
That's right.
Why? Because the victim was white and the alleged perpetrators were black. So we have to work at valuing the black woman. And our sister that spoke last week, she had mentoring programs, because I think one of the things, Sister Pamela Muhammad, one of the things that we talked about was seeking resolutions and suggestions. So we know this is a problem. The question is, knowing that this is a problem, what can we do? How can we help to bring, just alleviate some of these problems?
Ma'am. No, I mean, really great question. And I think when we look at the overall devaluation of the black female, which, you know, the slave history and the actual abuse that goes on in the prisons and goes on in the communities, we really have to look at a solution that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan also quoted, which is the worth of women has to be restored. And I took this off of Facebook, so I'm going to quote it as on face value. But he said the worth of women has to be restored at all costs. The woman's worth has to be reestablished. Women must help to reestablish their own value by never giving themselves to any man unless there is love and commitment. Now, again, that is not as related to the issue of women being raped in prison, but I do think it has a lot to do with the speaking out and the prevention where black girls can, you know, listening to stories like Sister Pamela's and listening to the solutions that we're saying, you know, to separate ourselves from this system, we really do have to look at. So I wanted to put that out there because, you know, the woman's worth has to be reestablished. And, you know, I just think that's so very important because I was wanting to also ask Sister Pamela something she shared with me, and that was about the effect of this type of mistreatment. What does it have on women once they get out of being incarcerated? You know, they're supposed to be coming out to become better people, but is that mental abuse? You know, this is definitely something that we need to be aware of so we can help work on in terms of the mental trauma. So did you want to talk about that, Sister Pamela? And before you did that, I want to say that this show is always caller-generated, and if you have a question or a comment please press the number 1 to get into the host queue so we can talk to you either a question or a comment on this topic. Thank you. Go ahead, Sister Pamela.
These women that are abused in prison, when they on the time to come home to return to their communities and their families, they are so beat down and psychologically drained from the mental abuse, the sexual abuse, the mistreatment of that they suffer behind the prison walls. So when these women come home, they haven't been able to address those issues. When they come home, they're still dealing with those psychological nightmares or being traumatized in prison. And when they come home and they have to try to be that wife, be that mother, be that girlfriend, be that sister, be whatever it is, they have to be reminded that that trauma come back and revisit them. So what they find themselves doing is turning back to crime because they're not getting that help that they need when they come out of prison because they're being abused in prison. And so if the help don't come from inside the wall, you can't. It won't always heal you when you get home. Prison's supposed to be able to help you, to help you. I find more women that come out of prison damage more coming out of prison than when they went into prison. So the help that the women are not receiving behind the prison walls are receiving when they come out of prison. I have a program called My Turning Point Program. It's a 13-week program where I have these women to deal with their addiction, their circle of pain, their broken promises. And these women here deals with a lot of, Lord, pain that's so unspeakable. So much pain that when you deal with a woman coming out of prison and she's telling you that the prison guard had her to do some of the things that's unthinkable to her. And I know those prison stories. I live those prison stories. I was actually not in prison when I was raped. I was on a work release program where I was still in the DOC's custody. So
right.
I hear these women's stories. I understand their pain. And let's I say it now, until we can, as the judge said, write laws, and I thank her for saying that the wheels of justice may be moving slow, but there is help coming to the women. But right now, I cry for help for our female offenders. And I want to say this to my guests and to you, Pamela. It's not only female offenders that's being raped. Those are the ones that's in prison that they voices are silenced and they powerless in their situation because they in the hands of somebody they entrust or are supposed to protect and serve. But I find equally as many women that's free in the world that's raped and abused just as well.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
So the value of the black woman is just not behind the prison walls. We find a lot of our sisters, even in a marriage, married to ministers, we find wives that they find themselves in a sexual abuse relationship, even in a marriage. People don't realize, but people married can be raped. I had a girlfriend that was raped by her husband. So there's abuse go on. And not only in the prison, but it continually to go on. But to say to these women that are suffering the mental state that they in when they come out of prison, I can see why the return is so high because of the pain and the suffering that they walk out of prison with and what they meet coming out of prison. Is there's no programs. There's not enough to sustain these women. Drugs and go right along with a lot of their mental to help. We need more drug programs. We just need more programs. And they took a lot of these programs out of the prisons, you know. And so I don't know what to tell you other than when I was raped and abused, I thank God for my family. I thank God for my strong friends I have in the Nation of Islam. I thank God for my Black Panthers. I thank God for my Christian brothers and sisters because if it wasn't for my faith that I lean upon every day to trust God with this daily walk that I do, and I have to remind myself, this is not my fight alone. I'm just a vessel, and I'm just allowing God to mold me in the image of my voice and fight for many women around the world, not just in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I fight for every woman that I can because I want to use my voice. I want to be the vehicle to justice, to stop and allow my voice to be heard from the mountaintop that these perpetrators need to be prosecuted. There was no reason Donald Reed Cochran Sr. should have been prosecuted. But yet the state officials took and destroyed the glass off shaker with DNA on it. Destroyed it to impede my justice. But I will continue to fight. I will continue to advocate my voice, and I will continue to stand.
Yes, ma'am. So, Ms. Smith, you know, as you're saying, you know, we are also looking at, you know, the violation of black bodies by the system. This is one of the big issues here because we're looking at the racist system. We're looking at the fact that this comes out of our servitude, slavery, and we are looking as members of the nation. A lot of times we do understand that this type of treatment, this type of evil, wicked system, this, you know, the United States and the crimes that is committed against black people is solution. Our solution is separation. And so, you know, one of the things as lawyers, we see recognizing in the legal system, we see police shootings of black women. We see the adultification where higher rates of black girls treated as adults and incarceration rates higher. We see the parent-child relationship where black women are, you know, their children are taken. The women, when you come into court sometimes, and Sister Michelle, I think you can speak on this, where sometimes when women do present themselves in court and they do have children and they are working mothers and the needs of the working mother is many times just totally ignored. Some of the crisis that black mothers are facing. And then I think even the violation of black bodies in prisons, in movies, in videos, because this whole thing about the media and this trashy, these trashy videos that are pushed upon our girls and our women, you know, which really encourage sexual harassment, which encourage rape, you know, encourages the use of our body. We, you know, this is all part of that vicious cycle that you're fighting against. And the last thing I want to say is that I do really value your fight because one good thing is that you value yourself. And this isn't something that your strength to fight for your, you know, your abuse, your crime, the crime against you. You're standing up and fighting, and that takes a lot of strength. So I do want to, you know, thank a lot for you. You're an example for others, and you speak to women and girls, and we're going to get back to some of, you know, some of your stories and some of your insight. I wanted to give Sister Michelle an opportunity, if she could, to talk to us about some of the women that we see that come before us and some of the, you know, in, you know, different things that are unique to black women and the lack of value that this system places on us.
Yes, ma'am. Let me say this. I think Sister Pamela, it was beautiful for you to thank Sister Pamela Smith for her work and her advocacy, whether she turns out winning or not. Her fight is something that's so important because what happens is in this war of trying to get equality and being treated the way we should be, it takes everyone on all different levels to be singing or yelling about their individual issues that are going on because at some point it all comes together and it culminates, which I won't get into it at this point, which is why God is present to rectify the situation. But we have to do our part, and so we thank Sister. You know, the bottom line is the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that deals with taking these babies from the womb, little girls, and explaining to them who they are and whose they are and the fact that they should be valued, it's so important because the mindset and what this world has done to us, the world that we live in, it has devalued us. It is a system that is in place that's very hard to take apart. So how do we do this? We do it by teaching children or teaching young girls at a very young age who they are and their worth. And that comes through a systematic type of teaching that has to be generated where we tell them you don't have to wear these type of clothing. Protect who you are. You are valued. No, you shouldn't have white dolls. You should appreciate the black doll. The melanin in your skin makes you special. It makes you superior. Did you know that? The teaching, and even now, their brothers and sisters, they're trying to get in the school system a curriculum that deals with the value of who we are. Because, see, as a little girl, even growing up, the first thing I hear in school is my people were running around with bones and like savages, and these white people came and saved us and brought us into civilization. You know how terrible that is to do to the mind of a child? You sit there and you think you are worthless because, God damn it, that's what they told me in school. I was just a savage somewhere. That's all I was, and I didn't have anything. But the truth is, right, we were so much more than that. We are the original people. We did have civilization and everything. And then when you track, there was a wonderful series called Hidden Colors where the brothers and sisters were breaking down the history of how black people were in charge of everything. You know, but that's not being taught in the school. So one-on-one in the school, I'm being taught that I'm not as good as these people are. So there goes my questioning of who I am and allowing things to happen to me because, right, I'm worthless, right? We did the doll experiment. The children wanted the white doll over the black doll. This is a systematic thing that was done to us on purpose. And the only thing to take that out, the way to rectify valuing yourself and making sure is to take these babies from the time they get out of there, out of that womb to come into this world to teach them the right way, which can only be done through the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that we have. And so I wish that our people would gravitate towards it because the teaching is not for only Nation of Islam members. It's for Christians and Baptists and everybody else that wants to gravitate and see the truth of who we are so that we can have value. So in the system, in the judge system, yes, that's why we fight hard in the family courts to make sure that there are judges of color there because only we are uniquely qualified to understand what our brothers and sisters and young girls go through and being devalued because we came out like that. We came in the same educational system. And then by having those judges there and attorneys that know the struggles, it helps, you understand, in the system. So we do as much as we can to make sure that we are advocating and letting these little girls know. There was a judge here in Westchester County where I am, Happy Davidson, a sister, who started a court called the GRIP Court. That court was geared towards justice. She, being wise enough to know through the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, recognized that girls have to be taught differently, that they can't be with the brothers. So her court was only for girls and for young ladies. Because she understood, as we do, that we're taught differently, and we have to be taught about who we are, how fabulous we are, you know, valuing ourselves, making sure we understand that no matter what shape, form, and fashion we come in, we're beautiful, and that we are goddesses, that we are the mothers of civilization. There was a whole thing, and she had a court where she worked just on girls, and because she understood that, you know, we need to be told who we are and to be valued. So in a small way, the courts are trying through the brothers and sisters that are there to come full circle. But we're clear, right, that you have to take apart how many years of distortion of the mind of our people and our girls and our women, you know, and that's a very difficult task. So at the end of the day, we push the separation. And even if the separation is not separation per se, it's definitely the mental. And so the program that the nation has is so uniquely qualified to let our sisters know. We're talking about the sisters. Of course, it's for men too. But to let our sisters know how wonderful we are. And that's why you see the brothers, falling over themselves to pull out a chair to make sure that she's protected. Man, you won't see a sister walking down the street by herself without a brother doing some guarding and stuff like that. And so we're clear in the nation about how important it is, the black woman, how important it is to protect her and let her know how special she is. I just wish that more people would gravitate towards the good things that the nation has to offer vis-a-vis our teaching about this very subject. And perhaps that would stop a sister because she's got the early learning and the education and the wisdom, how special she is, from allowing somebody to rape her or abuse her in any kind of way. and speaking up for herself like Sister Pamela Smith, who's done that. And I think, Sister, you are fabulous. God put it in your spirit, and you are fighting. And whether you win in that court or you don't, the fact that you're out there fighting is helping all of us. It's helping to bring the matter to the forefront. You know, it's sometimes we bring lawsuits just to make sure that we're bringing an issue out, not really saying that we might win it, but just being in it and making sure that people hear it is part of the fight that we have going on. So we thank you, Sister Pamela Smith, from the bottom of our heart, as being members of the Nation of Islam, that that's what we're doing all day long, is trying to save our people and let them know how special they are and not to allow people to abuse them. I can go on and on, sisters. Let me get off thing here. But thank you, Allah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Because a brother texted in, and I hope he does press the number one to get in the queue with his comment, because he said, yeah, we do want full and complete freedom. Many of, you know, that's one of the tenets on the back of the final call. And even, you know, the separation, as Sister Nichelle even brought up. But I also think, as I'm listening, and Sister Nichelle, you know, this is the other tenet, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has told us to make our own communities decent and safe places to live. And this issue about devaluation of the black woman, which we're seeing one aspect of it coming from slavery and the rape, you know, so we got to teach ourselves. We got to teach our girls. We've got to go out into these communities. It's great that the courts are picking up some programs. And so this is a legal program, and we talk about legal issues and we talk about legal solutions, but we also talk about community activists and solutions that we can do, you know, just to help ourselves. And so I think getting that perspective from Sister Pamela about what type of trauma and what type of mindset that this develops, that type of torture, as she say, taxpayer-funded torture. You're going into prisons that are funded by your taxpayer dollars only to have women and men and all kinds of people abused and tortured. You know, this is a wicked system. But going back to making our own communities decent and safe places to live, as Sister Sherry was saying, you know, we got to talk about solutions. So, again, if anyone has a question or a comment, and please press number one to get into the host queue. Because I think this is an important conversation about protecting and valuing the black female as we talk about it in the law. And I put out there that no nation can rise any higher than its woman, and this is something that Sister Nichelle has been talking about as well, because we know that it is so very important how we think about ourselves and how we conduct ourselves. And, again, I just have to always go back to Sister Pamela, who fought. You know, she fights back fear, because fear does rule a lot of people who are abused in the criminal justice systems to not say anything. So our Sister Pamela Smith, she is fighting. She has fought back fear. Like she said, her strength in God as an advocate. And not only has she said she does it for herself, she speaks for others. As the Final Call article talked about, she's fighting for her sisters, she's fighting for herself. And so having that attitude that no nation can rise any higher than its woman. And so sometimes I know, you know, our women and girls, you know, we may be the only ones who are willing to take that stance and say, well, I'm not going to dress a certain way, or I'm not going to, you know, be a part of what this enemy is pushing, like Sister Michelle said, or it might have been Sister Sherry that talked about that this system of devaluation, this is systematic. You know, this is like a machine. It comes through the videos, it comes through the media, and then, you know, it drives into the prison, and then once you're in the prison, they're reinforcing it with abuse and, you know, in the courts. So it's you know, they like the minister said, you know, we turn on ourselves, because then we're having this mindset of devaluation in our own minds. Sometimes we are our worst enemies. You know, we can see it when we're talking about young men, maybe with the shootings, with the violence in our community. But what about this devaluing mental state that many of us are in as black women and girls Again, we're talking about this white man and his system, which the prison is just an outgrowth of their mind, you know. And so at this call, we have a caller. Okay, we have Brother Daryl Muhammad. I'm going to open up his. Brother Daryl. Brother Daryl, assalamu alaikum.
Well, like assalam. Happy Savior's Day. I have
happy
a question.
Day to you too.
Yeah, I have been faithfully on the Savior show, and after I found out you had a show, I just constantly forget Tuesday. Praise be to Allah, I got through today.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you.
Yes, I've been listening to excuse me, what our sisters is going through in this prison system and how they're being raped. They had an article, but it hit the Facebook, and it was a sister saying that there was a young girl who was handcuffed, and just she was in jail. She hadn't went to prison. She was picked up off the street, and whatever they charged her for, but someone in there worked there, videoed it, and it got out. She was handcuffed from behind, and they was constantly raping her. And it was an outrage, you know, and people, I'd never heard any more about it. One person said they need to directly kill this officer that was in there raping her. I'm talking about repeatedly raping her while she was handcuffed. She was unable to even defend herself. And this was what's going on, not only in the prisons, in the jail. You know, our women are getting picked up and they're being raped, and half of this is not being really put out here. So these are the things that, like Sister Ava said, you know, there's no way we could get around this but to separate from this beast, because right now we're still in modern slavery. It never stopped. They just took the chains off and put them on our brain. So we have to understand this would never stop. It's all about separation. Our people are being put in prison, men and women. I'm hearing that they said the number of prisoners, more women in prison than there are men. I don't know how true that is, but that's what I've been hearing. And also I have heard about when you spoke about our sister Tawana Brawley. I followed that when it first came out, but they said that, and the minister called her in and the family and brought her into Mas Marianne, and they're going to try to say she carved KKK in her own self and put herself in a garbage bag and put herself in a dumpster. We all know that that was a habitual liar. But I'm hearing now, since we talking about it now, I had heard, babe, a couple of days ago, that some of our people are bringing it up, saying that sister came on national TV and said that he concocted. I said, that's not true. I never heard that. And I followed the whole thing when it first came out, and the minister said you would not put your hands on her and get her again because she belongs to us. Have you heard anything about that she supposed to have said out of her own mouth that she concocted that?
No, sir. I've never heard that, Brother Daryl. No, sir.
And that's what I was trying to tell. I said, where are y'all getting your information from? That's it. Now you're making it look bad for your own sister. But, oh, no, I heard. I said, no, you couldn't have heard. I said, I followed it all the time, all the way up until the minister brought her into the nation. Now, I was looking at this live while she was on the stage with the minister, and the minister put to the nation, you had never, I mean, to the world, that you would never, ever get her again. She belongs to us. So
yes,
it just said that how I take things and just concoct it and put it out and make our sisters look bad. It's bad enough as it is that these Caucasians is out here raping our women and getting away with it.
Yes.
Like the sister said, she's going to take it to the end about what happened to her. But it was a sister that it was being raped by this police officer in the city. And he was the older sister said she thought he was going to shoot her, but he didn't. So she ended up putting it out there that she was raped. But they were trying to get away with a lot of it, saying these that was being at, you know, drugs, on drugs, and
yes,
they were low people, and that's why they were getting away with it. But I heard that they did finally convict this devil. So I just want to thank you for your show. And it's now that I'm hearing a lot, it's a lot of valuable information coming from your show. And I pray and thank Allah continue to bless you in your show.
All praise to Allah. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. And as Brother Daryl was saying, you know, I think one of the things Ms. Smith may have said today, but, a lot of times you see certain victims that make it out in the public, but there are thousands of people who are never, their stories never come to light. thousands of women for, you know, for every one, and this is just my opinion, but for every one, you know, there are probably 100 that are being mistreated, abused. We see that Sister Anjanette Young, that was the black woman who was attacked when the police did a raid in February of 2019 in Chicago. And this woman, remember, she was totally undressed by these police that came into her house. We know our sister Breonna Taylor, who was murdered, and that was just a travesty that no, you know, they weren't charged for the killing and the just the devaluation of our sister. And the one who did get some charge, he didn't get convicted. I don't believe he got convicted. Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's just
Yes, you're still there. Still here.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Brother Darrell, Sister Pamela, are you there? We might have gotten off. Can you guys hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, so
all praise is due to Allah.
This call is not open right now, so I'm going to go ahead. Sister Michelle, did you want to say something?
No, ma'am. I was just making sure we were all there. I want to tell Brother Darrell we appreciate him coming on and making the beautiful comments. Yes, sir.
And so let me see. We're going to try once again. Brother Lewis, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing real good. Real good show, Sister Pam. And I want to thank you and Dr. Ava Muhammad for having a show and keeping us on point with separation, which is not just a slogan. It's a reality. The reality is that integration has failed because the integration is a sin. And the wages of sin are death. And every day, the enemy is showing us more and more that we need a full and complete freedom in a separate state or territory to call our own. Every day we're seeing this more and more. And we have real great legal minds on tonight. And I noticed that the Biden administration is proposing to do away with the term mother and replace it with birth. And so it's like right in front of our faces, they're redefining what a mother, what a woman really is. And so what I see is that they're trying to make the black man and the black woman into different subsets. And they're using the black man to completely effeminize him in such a way that he's non-territorial and doesn't feel like it's mandatory for him to respect, protect, and manage or control the black woman. So it's real interesting what they got going on, but I do have just a question, and it might be a legal question. I don't even know if you have time to answer it, but it seems like the white man, who is our constant enemy, always takes away morality and gets us to focus on ethics, and then he uses the ethics to change the law after he poisons the culture and the environment. But we don't have any morality, so we don't have any truth where we can actually pursue justice. What is the difference between
interesting
following ethics versus following our original traditional black morality? Have y'all seen that, or is it something y'all can speak to as lawyers or judges?
Yeah, well that's a good point. Who wants to take anybody want to take that? I can say some things. Go ahead, Sister Sherry.
I definitely have some stuff, but I'll wait for Sister.
Right. Morality has to do with that innate sense of right versus wrong. for instance, nobody has to tell us that it's wrong to hit other people because we don't like being hit, right? Nobody really has to tell us that it's wrong to steal because we don't like having things taken from us without our permission, right? Morality, that's that innate sense. Ethics is a set of rules or standards, and that is the biggest difference, I believe, is that ethics are more something that society has set forth and set these standards. It's man-made. Morals are innate. Morals are God-made. That is it. God gave us a sense of morality. God gave us a sense of right and wrong. I hope that helps.
No question. That was right on point, sister. You know, it's my business ethic. And it's funny that the brother brought it up because we were just dealing with the difference between ethics and morality. And I think it's a very important point, very intellectual, where ethics are being raised over morality. But I think, sister, you explained it exactly correct as far as I'm concerned in terms of what is the difference between ethics and morality, and that's the point that the brother's making. We're going to be ethical, but the morality stuff, no one's enforcing the morals. You understand what's right and wrong, and the morals are developed over the time with how your religion and different things that you've experienced through life. With ethics is a little different, but you know, I think the brother makes an important point that they're doing ethics over morality, and that is a problem because what's moral is almost like what's there that you've built upon spiritually, how your life has been developed, how you interact, and things that you grew up with, knowing what right and wrong is, and that's so important. But it does suffer because the ethics is not on that level with morality. So I think the brother's making a very important point, and it's just another sign of the wickedness of the world that we live in and the fact that separation at some point is just what's going to have to happen, period, as my young adult children would say, period. I mean, you know, it just is.
And you know, I think, cause, look, I do this. Sometimes I'll mute myself and I'm just talking and it's like, oh, okay, I'm on mute. But you know what? I think another part of this that we're looking at as lawyers is the separation between church and state. You know, I've heard the minister speak off, you know, talk to us about the difference between a theocracy and a democracy. And so I believe, this is my interpretation, that because America is a country that separates church and state, you really can't legislate hardly morality. They are disallowing people at times from interpreting issues from a morale, you know, based on morals, based on your church, based on your belief. And actually, many times it's ostracized and made to look as if it doesn't fit into a legal analysis, like right and wrong. And Brother Lewis, I open your mic up again. I don't know if you still have a question.
I'm so glad you did.
Because
let me.
Yeah,
I just wanted to add one thing.
Go ahead.
If I can, sister, the morals deals with what's really good or bad, right? And so right and wrong is kind of like an ethical thing. That's how we teach it in this business class, is that, but the morals part is kind of like an individual code of what's good or bad. And that's so much more important in the sense of developing.
And I just want to say real fast before Brother Lewis speaks on that, would you also agree, Sister Judge, that because of the issue about the separation of church and state, you know, things like prayer, for example, are somehow legislated out of certain institutions, or it's seen as, you know, being some privilege to be able to pray, when we know that prayer should be at the root of your decisions. You know, the Ten Commandments should be at the root of how we legislate and live in peace. And so don't you think that whole separation between church and state kind of has an issue with it as well?
Absolutely. I agree, Sister Pamela, and Brother Lewis brings
it.
Absolutely. That's the problem.
Yeah, I think he's on point. Thank you.
Care about, yes.
Yeah, Brother Lewis, did you answer your question?
Yes, this is a powerful conversation because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that all of the original people were Muslims by nature. And he wasn't talking about it just as a label, but we naturally submit to the morality that came with the universe. And he said all of us done that except for the rebellious devils. They cannot submit to the will of God. And so they have to separate church and state mainly for the purpose of practicing an ethic that they fuel or turn into filth and indecency using their culture and then integrating us into the culture so that we mimic their behavior. And what I found is that even those of us who have matriculated or got a lot of education, oftentimes we only mimic white culture, so we don't weaponize our education in a black way. Not like the sisters talking tonight. These sisters are fighters. So what we have to do
is to become
the greatest social engineers, social activists, social engineers, political activists, economic activists, who socially engineer into our people into a different type of culture and start telling them the benefits of separation, where we have our morality as the foundation of our ethics and our law and our legal system that we bring together in a territory to call our own. But Satan is very tricky in how he uses the law to make mischief by tricking us using the cultural environment and ethics and erasing and making us think that morality is not necessary. See, when you have no morality, you become like a snake. The very backbone of what it takes to be a nation is taken out of us. And it's only when the black community, I'm not talking about any other community because I'm just talking about our community, particularly our men and women, but our men have to become a moral backbone again to where we can pull ourselves up and start walking upright. Because the way we're going with integration and following white ethics and culture and taking out the morality that our great-grandparents and our forefathers had is the downfall of the black community. So
my
I appreciate
God.
You letting That's me make right. a comment, Sister Pam. And may Allah bless all of you sisters.
You on it, brother.
I'm so
Thank
grateful
you,
that
sir.
Black women with for us. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank
you.
Thank
Wa
you, Brother
Ron.
Thank
Beautiful,
you,
sir. Thank you.
Right on point.
Yes. Because there was a brother by the name of, I won't call his name, one of the attorneys who listened last week, and he felt like the conversation between us as black women was so enlightening because we oftentimes talking about sometimes how we our voices these victims, these women, you know, aren't heard, or the women who went missing, there's no voice for the black woman. And so this is something we're going through. And I think morality has a lot to do with that too, because respecting the black woman, that's certainly loving the black woman as you love your mother, as you love, you know, your wife, this is very, very important. And I think at the root of morals, as Brother, wait a minute, we have a caller. Let me open up her mic. We have Sister Ava. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Ava.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. I didn't
want to interrupt you mid-sentence.
Well,
I've been listening for a while. And I was going to just say, you know, towards, and I know we're coming toward the end, but I am enchanted with this panel and with this conversation and with what Brother Louis Ali, who just called, brought to it. I wish that you all could set up something. You know, Sister Pamela Smith, Sister Attorney Judge Nichelle, Sister Attorney Sherry. I don't know if Sister Barbara made it on tonight, but of course yourself, Sister Pamela. But this is critical to our ability to survive what is happening now. We're in a depopulation war, and of course we're struggling to fight physically. But the discussion that you all having is so crucial, because if we're not morally rooted, spiritually rooted, we'll be unacceptable to God. You know, we talk about a separation and going into our own territory, our own land. We can't fall into this belief, this false belief that this is completely race-based, that it's just all black and white. It's also about right and wrong.
Absolutely.
And as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has taught us, and it's you all have dealt with it so beautifully, that self-accusing spirit, that innate voice, that messenger of God in ourselves that immediately tells us the difference between what's right and wrong and corrects us. But as Brother Louis is saying, we live under a rebel against God. We silence that voice. We ignore it. But as a two-year-old, we know we're not supposed to take that cookie. No, nobody has to tell us that. And then if we, you know, we lie about it, that needs to be made secure. And we need to push further. And 75% of the work is with the woman. It is incumbent on us to do our part, just as the men are being called upon, as Brother Louis is saying, to do theirs, to provide the environment, as a brother said on my program last week, Brother Hannibal. The 25% the man is charged with includes make the environment for us to function within, so we don't have to call upon our masculine side in order to survive. And
thank
then
you.
We are no longer right. What Allah meant for us to be, which is, yes, high achievers, but retaining our femininity. But if we have to be the protector and the provider, that's not possible.
That's right.
But we have to become the beings that make a man want to stand up and be a man, which begins with putting some clothes on. I went to a graduation today in a public school, and I couldn't believe what I was looking at. But we have a lot of work to do. That's all I can say. And I didn't want to get on a soapbox, but I am such an admirer of this panel. I'm please do something like this again. And we need to go on Zoom or something, Sister Pamela. Sister Pamela Smith and Pamela. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Praise
God.
I'm still
alive.
I'm going to fall back.
Yes, ma'am.
Ava. Beautiful.
Yeah. And like Sister Judge Nichelle is saying, that caller was Sister Minister Ava Muhammad, who is the national spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And she also has her program, which comes on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on the Elevated Places, and that is Ask Dr. Ava. So thank you so much, Sister Minister Ava, for giving us your words. We really do appreciate that. Yeah,
appreciate it.
So we're down to, you know, the last minutes, and as Sister Ava was saying, that morality you know, point that was raised is so important, because I guess I was thinking about the media and the trashy, quote-unquote, rap music or any kind of music. I'm not picking on rap because I actually really like rap, have always liked what they call hip-hop. But I don't like music that does not value black women and encourages us to use in our bodies for advancement, because it ends up in failure and complete, you know, it's like a trap. You know, you these women are out here and, you know, the next thing you know, this is how your feelings get hurt. Like Sister Ava was saying, you know, we won't be accepted by God. And so my point is that the morale argument, sometimes we hear it being negated. They'll say, oh, well, you know, it's in style. You know, that's just old fashioned. You know, no, it's just not moral, you know. And so we got to put morality back in the headlines, you know. And that's the point I want to make. So did anyone else want to close out? So Sister Pamela Smith, you know, I thank you so much for sharing your story and just being so courageous and valuing yourself. When I speak to this sister, she reminds me of those black women who stood, you know, they stand for justice. She said, oh, you know, just the strength in her voice. So I'm so thankful that you came on tonight. I'm thankful that you got a chance to hear from Sister Ava. Muhammad, you know, she's really, you know, as you've heard, so wise, and the other sisters as well. Of course, Sister Sherry, Sister Judge Michelle. So thank you again, Ms. Smith. And
thank you,
Sister
Michelle. So much.
Go ahead. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to say it's so wise, Dr. Ava Muhammad, my idol, just a leader, a teacher, and a star. You know, the minister said, don't think I do this thing all by myself. I got stars in here, and she's one of them. All praises due to Allah. I wanted to say one thing. As a judge in the city court, when I'm doing my thing there, our people absolutely, unequivocally have their self-accusing spirit. There's something about when they walk into that courtroom and they see me up there, and when they're reading out those charges of what they did, you could see the shame on all of their faces, brothers and sisters. If they were guilty of it, they look at me and I look at them like, really, this is what we're doing now? And you could see it. They have it. And like Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad said, we just have to appeal to that. This world is telling us to smother that, right? And making us unfit to even meet with God and to be God. But I'm telling you, they still have it. Sister Pamela Smith said one thing. She was guilty of the crime. It didn't mean that self-accusing, that good woman, that God was not in there and needed to be brought out and deserved to be. And so our people understand who they are because they do have that self-accusing spirit. I see it every day in their faces and their eyes as they look at me. And so, and we can save them. And we do have that. We have that charge. That's what the nation is all about. To getting them back to not smothering what Dr. Ava Muhammad said, not smothering that morality, the thing that we know, that God in us, that we know what's right and wrong, we know what's good and bad, and this world smothers it out, but they have it, and they just need somebody to tell them to keep it at the forefront of their minds. And with that
That's
said,
right.
You know, sisters and brothers,
yes, ma'am.
Sisters, I'm, you know, beautiful. I thank Dr.
Yes,
Ava for coming on.
Yes, ma'am. And knowing that you can do it, because, again, going back to our sister Pamela Smith, and I want everybody to go to the Final Call, you know, that's finalcall.com, the greatest newspaper on the face of the earth. Sister Nisa Islam, she wrote an article about Sister Pamela and being in D.C. where she brought attention to her case spotlighting sexual assault of female inmates. So also go to Sister Pamela's Facebook page. But I just wanted to say, even us as parents having courage to stand up and tell our children, you know what, baby, I know I want you to like me, but perhaps this is not moral, what you're doing, the dress or the you know, attire. And they'll love us anyway, because we've got to preserve our families and we have to fight for them.
Mm-hmm.
So Sister Sherry, thank you so much for coming on. We're down to 60 seconds. We really appreciate you as well.
Thank you. Just real quick, though, for the brother that asked about Tawana Brawley, know that sister did not recant. And as recently as October 2020, Essence was reporting
that her mother and stepfather were still seeking to have the case reopened. So,
thank
you know,
so
we
much
need
for
to
that.
Dispel those types of lies, because we perpetuate that sometimes against our own people, unknowingly, unwittingly.
Yes, ma'am. Ooh, excellent, excellent. So thank you all for listening to A Time for Justice. We thank you so much. To hear previous shows, you can log on to blogtalkradio.com. And I'd like to thank the Elevated Places team. I really want to thank Sister Rona tonight for her assistance, as well as Sister Samaya, all of the Elevated Places team, Sister Donna Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad, of course, Sister Minister Ava Muhammad. Would like to thank the listening audience, and thank you all for being special guests tonight on A Time for Justice. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Take care, Sister Sherry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sister.
We love you, Sister. We love you.
I love you.
Stay in the fight. Stay in the fight.